Let's begin by reading Romans chapter 8 and verse 28 once again. The Apostle Paul was the inspired writer, and this passage gives us a great message of assurance. And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose. That particular principle revealed in this verse is illustrated and demonstrated many times in the Bible. And in our series of lessons, we have seen how all things work together for good in the lives of Esther and her fellow Jews in Persia. We have seen how all things work together for good in the lives of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And as all things work together for their good, that in turn had an effect upon their fellow Jews in Babylon. And then we notice how the same principle is demonstrated in the life of Daniel. Daniel had a great influence upon his people, the Jews, in Babylon as well as Persia. So it's important for us to study from the scriptures and see this great principle demonstrated over and over again. In this lesson, we want to examine. This is actually our second lesson having to do with Naomi, but we want to continue looking at how all things work together for good in her life. Naomi, of course, is one of the main characters in the book of Ruth. Last week, we studied the book of Ruth very briefly. It's only four chapters long. It doesn't take long to read it. And it's quite an important narrative. It's one of the historical books of the Old Testament. But what we want to do this evening is make a few observations based on the information that we covered last week. So last week we looked at the book of Ruth from a historical standpoint. We studied what actually took place in the book. And this evening we want to make two observations. And these observations have to do with all things working together for our good. Be reminded that a man named Elimelech, he was an Israelite, took his family to Moab because of a famine. His wife was Naomi. They had two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. After the family arrived in Moab, Elimelech passed away. And then his sons passed away. But before they passed away, both of them married women of Moab. One was Ruth, the other was Orpah. Naomi learned that God had blessed his people in giving them bread. In other words, the famine had come to an end. And she decided to return to her homeland. Now, both of her daughters-in-law at first were going to go with her. She tried to persuade them to stay in the land of Moab among their own families. Orpah finally decided to stay, but Ruth was determined to go with her mother-in-law, and she went with her to her homeland in Palestine. After arriving in Naomi's homeland, Ruth had an opportunity to go out and glean. And it just so happened she went to a field of a man named Boaz. He was a wealthy man, and he was a relative of Elimelech. Now, that's very important. Eventually, Boaz married Ruth, and a very special bloodline was carried on. David was a descendant. Of course, Jesus eventually descended from that particular bloodline. So it's important for us to look at Naomi especially and see how all things work together for good in her life. Well, let's make one observation, then we'll make another one. I think this is important. All things working together for good in the lives of God's people does not prevent us from suffering. We need to understand that. Some people have the idea that because Christians suffer, that there's no credibility to Christianity. I beg to differ. The Bible never teaches that God's people will not suffer. We suffer just like everyone else. And the Bible even teaches that, by the way, in Romans chapter 8. The Apostle Paul, when he showed that all things work together for good in the lives of God's people, earlier in that chapter showed that God's people suffer just like everyone else. So we have difficulties. We have things that we have to contend with. So we need to understand that just because all things work together for good, that does not prevent God's people from suffering. So many people say that the suffering that exists indicates that there is not a God. Well, God is not responsible for the suffering that we go through. God helps us. As a matter of fact, God gives us hope because we look forward to a place where there will be no suffering. Well, this is an observation I think we can make from the life of Naomi. This poor woman suffered greatly. She lost her husband. Then she lost her sons. You see, under the law, her sons would have cared for her. She lost her sons. And that had an effect upon her, because when she went back home, the people saw her and said, "Is this Naomi?" And she said, "Don't you call me Naomi, you call me Mara." Naomi means pleasant. Mara means bitter. And if you examine the statements that she made, for a time, it certainly seems that she was pointing the finger at God because of all the problems that she faced. I'm not going to condemn Naomi for one moment, but I think this shows the effect that suffering can have upon a person. This woman suffered greatly. Well, there are certain things that we can do that will help us when we face difficulties. There are certain things we need to remember. For one thing, we need to remember that God will not allow his people to be tested or tempted, as the Bible says. It actually means tested above what we're able to bear. Let's look at 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and read verse 13. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 13 says, "There hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that you are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that you may be able to bear it." It's unfortunate, but over the years, people have developed a translation of that particular passage that is not accurate. So many times I hear people say, "Well, I know God's not going to put more on me than I can bear." Well, there's a problem with that statement. It's basically the same problem that Naomi had for a while. She was pointing the finger at God. When we make such a statement, we're indicating that God is the one responsible for the difficulties that we're facing. Well, my Bible tells me that my adversary is the devil, and he will do whatever he can to try to make God's people fall. God wants to help us. This is a great message of assurance that even though we might face great difficulties, God is not going to allow us to be tested above what we're able to bear. He'll make a way to escape. This is one of my favorite passages in the Bible. I put it right up there with Romans 8 and verse 28. This is a great message of assurance. Well, God is on our side. He wants to watch out for his children. That's something we need to remember, that although we might face great difficulties, God is not going to allow us to be tested above what we're able to bear. Something else that we need to remember when difficulties arise, we need to look for our blessings and we need to count them. Look at James 1 in verse 17. So many times when difficulties arise, we have a tendency to concentrate on them and overlook many other good things. James 1 and verse 17 says, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. We have a song in our books that I don't believe we sing enough. It's called Count Your Blessings. What a wonderful song that is. Well, I think maybe the principle is based on what's revealed in James 1 and verse 17. God is the giver of every good and perfect gift. Well, that's something we need to remember. We need to look for our blessings, and we need to count them. Rather than concentrate only on the negative things that are taking place, I know it's hard, I know it's a challenge, but we have to do our best to discipline our minds to look beyond that and not lose sight of all the good things. And another thing we need to remember is to cast our burdens upon God. 1 Peter 5 and verse 7 says, casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. Now, is it possible for a child of God to maybe question whether God cares? I seem to recall that David in Psalm 22 said, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? I seem to recall that Jesus quoted that when he was on the cross. Some of God's greatest servants have questioned whether God was really there. Had he maybe forsaken his people? Well, we have the assurance that God does care for us. Consequently, we're encouraged to cast all of our cares upon him. Well, these are some things that we need to remember. And it's based on the observation from the book of Ruth that all things working together for good does not prevent God's people from suffering. There are certain things we can do to be, as they say, proactive. We need to remember that God's not going to allow us to be tested above what we're able to bear. We need to remember to look for and count our blessings. And we need to remember to cast our burdens upon God. Well, those are some things that will help us when we face difficulties like Naomi faced. That woman really faced some great hardships in her life. So much so that she said, don't call me Naomi, call me Mara. Well, by the time we get to the end of the book, I think you'll see a change of tune. When she was holding that grandbaby, I just suspect there was a big smile on her face. Well, let's make another observation. And I believe this is clearly revealed in the book of Ruth. Concerning this matter of all things working together for good in the lives of God's people, that works in conjunction with God's revealed word. There are three great laws from the Old Testament that are demonstrated in the book of Ruth. And as the people involved were carrying out these instructions, you can see how God was working all things together for their good. Let's consider three of God's laws. One is the law of gleaning. Let's turn to Leviticus 23 and read verse 22. Leviticus 23 and verse 22 says, and when you reap the harvest of your land, thou shalt not make clean riddance of the corners of thy field when thou reapest, neither shalt thou gather any gleaning of thy harvest. Thou shalt leave them unto the poor and to the stranger. I am the Lord your God. Now, this law is repeated many times in the law of Moses. When the children of Israel harvested their crops, they were to leave those crops in the corners of the fields. Matter of fact, this goes beyond just the crops that were grown in the fields. It also had to do with their vineyards and olive yards and so forth. The crops were not to be, as we would say, clean picked. Some of the crops were to be left in the fields. And if someone was harvesting those crops and happened to spill some, it was to be left. Now, this was for the benefit of people who were in need. The poor, the strangers. Other passages speak about the widows and the fatherless. This is one way that God provided for those who were in need. They were allowed to go out into the fields and harvest some of the crops. But that was because the Israelites were instructed to leave some of the crops in their fields. Now, right after Naomi and Ruth returned to Palestine, one of the first things that you read about Ruth doing is she went out into the field to glean. Now, Ruth was from Moab. I wonder how she knew about this law of gleaning. Do you suppose Naomi taught her? I don't know that because it's not revealed, but it's something interesting to think about. She went out into the field to glean, and it just so happened that she went to the field of Boaz. I love the way that the Bible said it just so happened that she went to the field of Boaz. Well, that law of gleaning worked in conjunction with God working all things together for the good of his people. You see, if Boaz had not left some of his crops out in the field, if he had not obeyed God's law about gleaning, then Ruth could not have gone there and gathered some of the barley. You see how this works in conjunction with God's principle of working all things together for the good of his people? It would be important for Boaz to follow these instructions that relate to gleaning. Ruth, of course, would be entitled to go out into the field and gather some of those crops. Now, it just so happened that Boaz saw her and he was attracted to her. He asked about her and he instructed his servants to watch out for her and to actually provide for her. Well, that led to a very interesting meeting. And that meeting eventually led to a very important marriage. Let's mention another law. That is the law of redeeming. Let's look at Leviticus chapter 25 and read a few verses starting at verse 25. If thy brother be waxen poor and hath sold away some of his possession, and if any of his kin come to redeem it, then shall he redeem that which his brother sold. And if the man have none to redeem it, and himself be able to redeem it, then let him count the years of the sale thereof, and restore the overplus unto the man to whom he sold it, that he may return unto his possession. But if he be not able to restore it to him, then that which is sold shall remain in the hand of him that hath bought it until the year of Jubilee. And in the Jubilee it shall go out, he shall return unto his possession. When the Israelites finally went into the land of Canaan, the land was divided among the various tribes. And the selection of property was by the casting of lots. And then it was divided among the families of each tribe. And God's intention was for the land to remain within the family that possessed it. But these verses deal with a situation where someone becomes destitute, as we would say, and has to sell the property. Now, when he's able financially, he can redeem it himself. Or if he can't, then a relative can redeem it. That way, the property would stay within the family. And the year of Jubilee is mentioned when things would go back to their original owners. That's a very important law. It would certainly appear that Naomi's property was sold. And we can understand how she would be in need. Exactly when the sale took place, I don't know because it's not revealed. Remember that Elimelech took his family to Moab because of a famine. I'm not sure just how long they've been gone. But they've been gone for several years. And it seems that someone else has control of Naomi's property. Well, Boaz redeemed the property. He was a relative of Elimelech, but he was also a wealthy man. So he was financially able to redeem the property, and he did so. Now, it's interesting when you study about the dealings that Boaz had with another relative. Boaz apparently had looked into this matter in some detail because he knew that there was a relative who was closer kin than he was. Therefore, it would be the other man's right to redeem it. So Boaz sets up a meeting at the gate of the city, and there are some witnesses there. Some of the elders of the city were there to serve as witnesses, and this was a legal matter. And Boaz called upon the man to redeem Naomi's property. At first, he agreed to redeem it. But Boaz says, there's something else that you've got to take care of in conjunction with redeeming the property. You see, he would have to take Ruth as his own wife. And that brings us to the next law that we want to mention. And that is the law of performing the part of a kinsman. Now, it's mentioned in Deuteronomy chapter 25. Let's read a few verses starting at verse 5. If brethren dwell together and one of them die and have no child, the wife of the dead shall not marry without unto a stranger. Her husband's brother shall go in unto her and take her to him to wife and perform the duty of an husband's brother unto her. Now we'll read a few more verses that have to do with this law, but remember there was an occasion when the Sadducees came to Jesus and they thought that they would really be able to put him between a rock and a hard place with a question. They came up with this hypothetical situation and they mentioned this very law. You see, that shows us that people can use God's law in a deceitful way. The Sadducees did not believe in the resurrection, and they thought that they'd be able to get Jesus, as I said, between a rock and a hard place. So they came up with this situation where seven brothers all had the same woman as their wife. One brother had a wife. He passed away. The second brother took her, and on down the line. Seven brothers. You know, that might sound far-fetched, but I can remember Philip was mentioning someone that several of us know, and she's a widow, and Philip said, I don't believe I want to be involved with her because she's already had three husbands die. Well, that could be interesting. Imagine seven. And what they confronted Jesus with was, in the resurrection, whose wife is she going to be, because all of them had her? I can just see the smug looks on the faces of the Sadducees after they asked that question, thinking, we got him now. Well, the Lord dealt with that situation. He put those people in their places. He said, you're wrong. You do err, and you don't know the power of Scripture. By the way, the Sadducees claimed to believe in the law of Moses. So what did Jesus do? He quoted from the law of Moses to show just how absurd the situation was. He referred to the occasion when God spoke to Moses from the burning bush. And God said, I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Those men had been dead for years and years and years. But God said, I am. That one little statement indicated that somewhere and somehow Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were still alive. Well, the Sadducees claimed to believe the law of Moses. They obviously didn't. They just believed what they wanted to believe. But the situation that they confronted the Lord with is based on this law. You see, God intended for the names of the Israelites to remain. Therefore, he made provision that if a man took a wife and he passed away without having any children, then his brother was to take his wife and raise up, as the Bible says, seed in the name of the deceased brother. That way the names would not be put out of Israel. Verse 6 says, and it shall be that the firstborn which she beareth shall succeed in the name of his brother which is dead, that his name be not put out of Israel. And if a man like not to take his brother's wife, then let his brother's wife go to the gate unto the elders and say, my husband's brother refuseth to raise up unto his brother a name in Israel. He will not perform the duty of my husband's brother. Then the elders of his city shall call him and speak unto him. And if he stand to it and say, I like not to take her, then shall his brother's wife come unto him in the presence of the elders and loose his shoe from off his foot, and spit in his face, and shall answer and say, so shall it be done unto that man that will not build up his brother's house. And his name shall be called in Israel, the house of him that hath his shoe loosed. Well, when Boaz mentioned to this other relative that he was the closest kin and that he could redeem Naomi's property, the other relative agreed. But then Boaz said, okay, when you redeem the property, you've also got to take Ruth to be your wife. Now you see, Mahlon and Chilion, they were the two sons of Elimelech and Naomi. They had both passed away. There was not another brother. That would go to the next of kin. You see, God's law made provision for all these situations that could possibly arise. So Boaz let the man know that if he wanted to redeem the property, he was also going to have to take Ruth for his wife. Well, he said he couldn't do that because that was going to interfere with his own inheritance. So he took off his shoe. I've often thought, when he took that shoe off, I would love to have seen the smile on Boaz's face. You see, all things are working together for the good of his people. But that worked in conjunction with God's revealed laws. You see, God gave his laws for the benefit of his people. But to experience the full benefit, God's laws would have to be obeyed. That would in turn affect other people and how things would work together in their lives. So these are three very important laws given in Moses' law that are demonstrated in the book of Ruth. And you can see how those laws had an effect on all things working together for the good of his people. Now, having said that, God has given us numerous instructions to carry out in the New Testament. our approach to carrying out those instructions just might affect how things are working together for the good in the lives of other people. So we need to keep that thought in mind. You see, God's instructions are designed to work in conjunction with His providential care. And the way we respond to His instructions will not only affect us, but just might affect the welfare of someone else. So as we study the book of Ruth, I believe we need to keep these two observations in mind. I've studied that book many times. I enjoy sitting down and reading it. It shows how people can go through difficult times. But it also shows that God takes care of His people. Well, that's a great message of assurance for us.